Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. We have an hour of interesting science conversation in our first hour today before we meet these young kids from the intersection, from the street corners, who are changing the way of their lives and the lives of their neighborhoods. But we are going to examine what it means if neutrinos, these little things you cannot see, may be faster than the speed of light. What does that mean? And then we talk about things that may be in our water that could heal us. All that coming up in the first hour of the Mark Steiner Show, so stay with us and don't go away, because we're turning this over to WEA traffic for those of our listeners listening in the Baltimore area to know which way to go and which way not to go. So stay with us, and we will be right back. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. It's a pleasure to have you all with us here today on WEAA 80.9 FM, the voice of the community. Before I begin, let me say to you, the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Marlene and Stuart Greenebaum Cancer Center, an NCI-designated cancer center providing research, treatment, and education to further the prevention of and cure of cancer. Online at umgcc.org, or the number for more information is 1-800-888-8823. You can also go to steinershow.org and click on the University of Maryland Medical Center banner, and it is all right there as well. And let me tell you before we jump into our conversation that a tradition continues with the second annual WEAA Gospel Grace Benefit Concert featuring the legendary Lady Tremaine Hawkins. Also performing will be the Morgan State University Choir. That's Sunday, October 30th at 6 p.m. at the Murphy Fine Arts Center. Ticket information is available at Ticketmaster.com, at all Ticketmaster outlets, or you can call 410-547-SEAT, 410-547-SEAT. It's presented by the Morgan MBA program and public radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. We are going to take this first hour and look at some really interesting breakthroughs and ideas and controversies in science before we turn to some young people in our inner cities who are doing some stuff that will just make you want to stand up and cheer. But first, we're going to talk about this idea that these particles, which we'll describe in the course of this hour called neutrinos, some are positing maybe faster than the speed of light. That was in the newspapers. Well, that could be just not just groundbreaking. It could turn science on its head. If it's true, it could mean what we know about the universe is absolutely not true. So what does that mean? Well, we have with us today, the first half hour of our show, Dr. Keith Jackson, who is professor and chair of physics here at Morgan State University, Dr. Mario Livio, who is senior astrophysicist at the Hubble Space Telescope Science Institute, author of many books, including Is God a Mathematician and the Golden Ratio. And Keith and Mario, welcome to both of you. Good to have you back on the show.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
Mario, good to hear your voice.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, good to hear you.
Lashon Tova to you. Have a wonderful new year.
Yes, you too.
So, and to all of our Jewish listeners, I want you to have a happy new year. It's coming up in the next 2 days, coming up this evening. So let's talk about what this means, this idea that when I first saw it in the paper, I looked over at my wife, Valerie, and said, what is this? Something's faster than the speed of light? It's just, how could that be? And so if you could start with this, Dr. Jackson, just describe what your reaction to this was, and maybe describe, and just for our listeners who may not have heard of it before, what a neutrino is.
Okay. First of all, I want to say is
that... A little closer to the mic.
Oh. So. First of all, I'd like to say... that superluminal travel, that is, travel faster than the speed of light, is by no means restricted by the special theory of relativity developed by Albert Einstein. That there's some confusion in this, and certainly when you look at the Lorentz relations in special relativity, you would come to that conclusion. But that, indeed, that is not the framework of the theory. And in fact, the correct statement is that we have never observed any particle, maybe with the exception possibly this one, moving faster than the speed of light. The other thing is a neutrino is a particle that was discovered or actually postulated more so in the early 1930s. And it was postulated to conserve momentum, angular momentum, in nuclear decay. It was first detected in the early 1960s, I believe. A neutrino is a particle that was first thought to be massless, being massless means that it would always travel at the speed of light. And it existed primarily to, as I say, carry away angular momentum or conserve angular momentum in nuclear decay. Upon study, we, and particularly with the advent of nuclear reactors, we find that neutrinos are everywhere. And in fact, there are probably billions upon billions of neutrinos passing through our bodies right now. A Nobel Prize was awarded to a scientist for the discovery, the actual experimental detection of neutrinos at the Homestake mine in South Dakota. They're interesting particles. One thing is they react with next to, they don't react with anything. They can go travel through miles and miles of lead without interacting. They're very ghostly type particles. Recently, we've discovered there's more than one type of neutrino. Moreover, we discovered, so for example, one unresolved issue in physics was the flux of neutrinos from the sun. They seem to be extremely small. And this was, in fact, when I was a graduate student, one of the great problems in physics.
Mm-hmm.
And what we discovered instead was that we had detectors here, but they were only designed to look for one type of neutrino. And we discovered that in a transit from the sun to the Earth, a neutrino could change from one type to another. Okay? And in fact, there are many types of neutrinos.
So let me bring Mario leave you onto this. And yeah. It's a pleasure to have you back with us again, Mario. It really is.
Pleasure.
So when you heard this, what was your first reaction to the possibility and what it might mean?
So I had two reactions. One is that I'm extraordinarily happy that we reached such a stage in science where experiments with this type of precision can be made at all. I think that is remarkable that, you know, we can measure the travel time of neutrinos with that type of precision, that we can determine the distance between two points on the Earth to better than 20 centimeters, you know, and so on and so forth. My second reaction was that if this will turn out to be true, I'm going to eat my head. and I want to make the further statement that this is an even stronger statement that you might think, because I actually don't own a head. So what I proposed was to actually buy a head and then eat it, if this will turn out to be true.
Now, it begs the question. Now, why would you even make the bet you would eat your head? Do you think it's that so improbable that this could happen?
So let me tell you why I think this is very improbable. I mean, first of all, you know, special relativity was suggested by Einstein more than 100 years ago, and it has been tested to death, you know, in many, many experiments, and it passed all those tests. But more importantly, I mean, this idea that particles that have a mass, which neutrinos we know now do, I mean, they have a very tiny mass, but they have a mass, that particles that have a mass, this idea that they cannot travel faster than the speed of light, is related to such fundamental things as causality. Namely, you know, cause and effect. There is now a joke, you know, that is going all over the internet, you know, which says that a barman says, "We don't serve neutrinos here," and then it says, "A neutrino walks into the bar." So basically, you know, that if you can have particles that have mass and carry information, traveling faster than light, you can actually have causality violated, namely that, you know, it can happen that the barman will first say that statement and only after that you have the neutrino walking into the bar. And these things is just so improbable that, you know, if it were that these neutrinos indeed traveled faster than light, then this would literally shake the foundations of, you know, our most basic theories. Now, having said this, there are very exotic ways in which massive particles could reach another point in a way that it will look as if they traveled faster than light. But these are very, very exotic things, and it involves these neutrinos traveling in a different dimension, you know, in like, you know, we live in a universe that has three dimensions of space and one of time. If they could travel, let's say, in some sort of a fifth dimension, then they could take some sort of a shortcut and thereby would appear as if they traveled faster than light, when in fact they just took this shortcut in space-time. Now, these things are so exotic that if it will turn out that this is the explanation, it will be worth eating my head, because it would be one of the most amazing discoveries of all time. So either way, you know, I will be happy to eat my head if this will turn out to be true.
So Keith Jackson, you mentioned this whole notion of about other dimensions, what this might say if it was true, before we walked in the studio.
Yes, I mean, this might be the first hint of the existence of additional dimensions. And the analogy I like to use to explain that is that hidden dimensions can be, you know, most people say, well, how can you have hidden dimensions? Right. Well, you have only to look outside your window and you see that, as far as you know, the Earth is flat and that the shortest distance between two points is a line along this flat surface. But we all know that, in fact, the Earth is not flat. It has curvature. It's just that it requires, you know, intellect to be able to sense it, right, directly. So, indeed, the shortest distance between two points here on Earth is not a line, but an arc. And so imagine dimensions that are not large, but instead they're curled up very small. How small would they have to be? Well, if they were smaller than, say, 1 micron.
And a micron is?
1 millionth of a meter.
Okay.
125 times thinner than a hair. If they were only acting on that dimension, on that scale, you wouldn't detect it. And in the world of physics, particularly high-energy physics, a micron is huge. I mean, that's almost like comparing, you know, that's almost like the sun in size. And indeed, there are colleagues of mine that try to detect the existence of extra dimensions in benchtop experiments by doing things like measuring the gravitational force between two spheres. When you push the two spheres as close together as 50 microns, I think is the limit they've reached. Does it still obey Newton's law, or is there some deviation, plus or minus, from Newton's law of gravity? And so that's how we, but now we have these wonderful large machines, such as the Large Hadron Collider, and its sister machine here, the Tevatron at Fermilab, that allow us to search for additional dimensions. And as Mario said, the existence, that would be a discovery, a monumental discovery, the fact that there are additional dimensions. And people often ask me, well, what would that mean? And the answer is, well, I don't really know. I only know that when we first got the mathematical capability from Kepler, Galileo, and Copernicus, that all of a sudden we got the navigational ability to be able to traverse the Horn of Africa and get back. And it's not just Keith going around the Horn of Africa, somebody willing to put a couple $1 million worth of goods on a boat and, based upon calculations, just send their boat around the Horn of Africa. And then hopefully it comes back with silks and spices and things on it, so you could have that kind of trade. But that's one of the things that is most exciting to me, that even today, and given our depressed economic condition, people can delight in discovery. We've spent, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars to be able to see this ghostly particle. And maybe, and just maybe, it did go faster than speed light. Now, just remember that what you're talking about is that the precision of the measurement is that if you think the speed of light is 1, say the speed of light is 1, okay? Mm-hmm. The speed of this particle would be 1.0002.
All right.
That's what you've measured. Another way to look at it, the experiments were separated by about 454 miles, I believe. Okay.
Yes, that is true.
454 miles. And so you're saying that this particle, which you cannot see, is just difficult to detect, you can measure it at a distance of 454 miles and be able to tell that it was there 60 nanoseconds ahead of time.
Ahead of time.
60 nanoseconds, and that's 60 times 10 to the minus 9 seconds.
60 billionths of a second.
60 billionths of a second.
So Mario, that's what you were talking about a moment ago when you said that the most exciting thing for you in this process was the fact that we can even begin to detect things at that level.
That's exactly right. I mean, so here is an experiment that is, first of all, a phenomenal experiment. I mean, they shoot these neutrinos from the Large Hadron Collider, which is near Geneva in Switzerland. They shoot it to this experiment at Gran Sasso, which is in Italy, 454 miles away. They shoot it through the Earth, by the way, because neutrinos, they interact so weakly with matter that the Earth is completely transparent for them. So, the beam of neutrinos goes through the Earth. It doesn't need to go above the surface of the Earth. It goes through the Earth. They are able to use GPS systems to measure the distance between the two points, to an accuracy of better than 20 centimeters, which is better than 10 inches or so.
Mm-hmm.
So they know the distance to this accuracy. They can measure the time with this type of accuracy. And then they find that, by 60 billionths of a second, these neutrinos arrive earlier than, light would have traveled the same distance. This is a phenomenal result. Now, there is all kinds of systematics that can go wrong. I mean, namely, can they really determine the distance so well? Can they really determine the time so well? Can they do all? So what this team of scientists has done, they've done a phenomenal work in actually trying to determine what all the possible errors, can be in this experiment. In particular, things that are left to be checked is what is the width of the pulse of the neutrinos that they emit, because they need to, first of all, produce these neutrinos at the accelerator and then produce them by colliding protons, which is, are the basic particles of matter, colliding them with a target. Then these neutrinos are produced, and then they direct these neutrinos to where they want them to go. So they have to understand everything that is associated with this experiment, including, by the way, that there was a small earthquake in between. and they measure even, what happened as a result of that in order to be able to tell you this result. Now, why do I still say that the result is still improbable? And by the way, the scientists themselves say that. They never have they said, okay, this means that neutrinos can travel faster than light. What they say, look, this is what we got. And we are now continuing to check. They've set for 6 months on checking, on all possible errors. They continue to do that. They've given the results to the scientific community. There are two other groups that are planning already to repeat this type of an experiment, to see if they can reproduce the result, and so on. So it is all an enormous effort to try to understand what have they really found here. Now, why do I say it's very improbable? In 1987, in February of 1987, we had a star explode in the galaxy that is nearest to us, which is the Large Magellanic Cloud. That was called Supernova 1987A. A star exploded. theory of such explosion tells us that neutrinos should be emitted from such an explosion. And guess what? Neutrinos were detected from that explosion. We detected 11 events of neutrinos that arrived from supernova 1987A.
Arrived where? Here?
Here on Earth, uh-huh. Yes, to the detectors. Now, those neutrinos arrived just when the explosion was also observed. Namely, those neutrinos traveled not faster than light. In fact, they traveled in even slightly, because neutrinos do have mass, slower than light. Had this result, as it stands now, been correct, the neutrinos from the supernova should have arrived a few years before we saw the explosion. Because, you know, the distance is now so large that this, the fact that they are able to travel a little bit faster, you know, as Professor Jackson just explained, you know, by 200,000th, part in one faster than light, those neutrinos should have arrived years earlier. They didn't. So why don't these people say, okay, so immediately we know it's wrong? Well, there are still some differences. The neutrinos that came from the supernova were of one kind. The neutrinos they used in this experiment are of a different kind. There are three known kinds of these neutrinos. We call them electron neutrino, mu neutrino, and tau neutrino. The neutrinos they used in this particular experiment were of the mu type neutrino. The neutrinos that came from the supernova are of the electron type neutrino. So you could say, well, maybe there is a difference. Maybe it's not the same for both of them. Second, the energies were very different. The energy of the neutrinos they used in this experiment is much higher than the energy of the neutrinos that came from the supernova. So you could say, well, maybe the effect only happens at much higher energies and so on. So this is why we cannot immediately use the results from that supernova explosion to rule out this experiment. The physicists are completely aware, you know, of this, of the results of supernova 1987A. So they don't, you know, claim, aha, we really should have seen this years before the explosion. It's just that we don't know what this result means. But this is the beauty of science. You know, they come up with an incredible result. You know, Einstein would have been delighted to hear of a result like this, that they are able to measure things like this, and they are able to test his theory. You know, this is how science progresses. You have a theory until you have an experiment that shows that the theory no longer holds, and then you need to modify the theory. In this particular case, I mean, the modification may be so drastic that this is why, you know, most people believe that we need to simply find out why we got the result that we got, rather than, you know, hurrying to change the theory.
You want to jump in?
Well, for example, taking the result on, you know, looking at the result we have before us, what does it mean? As you've already mentioned, we don't want to sacrifice causality. There's another thing that theory affords us, the special theory of relativity affords us another thing that we might consider, and that is something called Lorentz invariance. Okay, one of the postulates of special, or one of the results of special relativity, is this concept of Lorentz invariance between two frames of reference moving relative to each other. And so what that means is that the lengths of certain things are preserved as they are transformed, as they undergo Lorentz transformation from one frame to the next. This is highly technical. So if you say you have to preserve causality, you can say, well, okay, we'll preserve causality, but maybe we have to sacrifice Lorentz invariance. That indeed there are some particles that can transfer from one frame to the other and not necessarily maintain Lorentz invariance, this constant length. The simplest way is to think of it as a length. And that is interesting in and of itself. The Lorentz invariance has been also a part of the standard model of physics for a long time. And now this also brings that into question.
So you both, as we conclude this in the next few minutes, I guess you both think at this point that Albert Einstein's critical idea, the speed of light, 186,000 miles a second, that barrier will not be breached, and E equals MC squared, and for our listeners, I mean, it equates mass with energy contained within it, C being speed of light, is not going to be breached.
No.
Breached.
No.
I definitely do not think that is what is going to happen here.
Okay. But the question is, was C, the speed of light, always 186,000 miles per second? Back in early epochs of the universe, maybe it was 1 mile per hour. Maybe it was some faster speed.
So,
what are the consequences of that?
Mario?
So indeed, there have been such theories with variable speed of light. I mean, at the moment, I would say we don't have any evidence that shows that the speed of light changes either, you know, with time, or that, you know, it can really change in terms of, you know, if I run with a flashlight, Einstein tells us the light would still move at the speed of light, and it would not. I would not need to add my speed to that speed and to the speed of light. And that is part of what causality is all about. I think that most likely, I mean, I will tell you honestly, I think that most likely they will discover, you know, what was it that caused this very, very surprising result, and not that we need to change the theory. But, like I said, the fact that we are able to test this to this type of precision is just phenomenal, and it just shows how science really works. I mean, you know, there is no sacred cow here, you know. Even something as fundamental as Einstein's special relativity, people are now, you know, willing to look at it. They will look at every possible thing to preserve it, if possible, and if not, you know, they will have to conclude, well, guess what? I mean, we are wrong on this, and we need to change our thoughts of this.
So we have to go. I really hope that the two of you will rejoin us. This discussion is really fascinating. You just listened to Dr. Mario Livio, senior astrophysicist at the Hubble Space Telescope Science Institute. Two of his books are Is God a Mathematician and The Golden Ratio. In the studio with me is Dr. Keith Jackson, who is professor and chair of the physics department here at Morgan State University. And it's really just been a pleasure. You two have been wonderful. For opening this up to our listeners.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you.
And Happy New Year to you, Mario.
Thank you, and you too.
And folks, we'll take a very brief break. And when we come back, we're going to look at, have one of our Urbanite Radio stories. And when we do, we're going to look at phagias that might just heal what ails you from our waters. And we'll talk about what that means. Stay with us.